Well, it has been some time since we were together in here studying from James chapter 1. So after being on quarantine for a while, we're looking forward to continuing that study that we were engaged in before. We want to go back to James chapter 1 and read verses 19 and 20, and this is actually the text that we'd been studying on for a week or two, that last week or two in our study before it got interrupted. But James 1, 19 and 20 says, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God." Now this is after he spoke in verse 18 about the fact that God by his own will begat us with the word of truth. So that's how we have been born again, by that word of truth, by God's own will. So he's the one that has done that in that manner. By our hearing his word and obeying it, then God has begotten us, and then he says that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So he didn't just reconcile us to himself and adopt us as his children, give birth to us again, but rather he sets forth what is also the goal, is the end point. It's not just a beginning. So he mentions the beginning in verse 18, when we are begotten or born again. That's when we start our race. But is there a finish to it? Is there a goal that we are to strive towards? And why did he beget us? It says that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. And so we went through a study of that and looking at what that involves, and that really is, in its context, especially with the remainder of what we have already been looking at here in James chapter 1, it's tied into that goal of our spiritual growth and what God intends to accomplish through us. And for this reason, wherefore, he says in verse 19, so in keeping with that, so that we can be that kind of first fruits of his creatures, we need to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Now, we went through the what it means to be swift to hear and slow to speak. We went through a study about those, and those are big things, as we know. And there's going to be more of that to come at the end of this chapter as he's teaching us these very important points that are essential to our being able to practice what is pure religion and undefiled before God, so that we are not deceiving ourselves and having our religion in vain. And if we don't bridle our tongues, then he tells us that our religion is vain in verse 26. And then we're going to have chapter 2 after that that's going to teach us about that we need to speak and do, as those will be judged by the law of liberty. Chapter 3 is going to have a lot of details, a lot of depth in teaching us about bridling our tongues. So there's a lot more to come in our study of James on that subject. But we can see how important that is. We're not going to be able to practice pure and undefiled religion. Instead, we would be practicing vain religion if we don't learn to be swift to hear and slow to speak. And where will that get us eternally speaking if we spend our time on this earth practicing a vain religion? That's not going to have us to be with God and in heaven for eternity. There's no way that practicing a vain religion will end up with our being with him in eternity. So that's how serious this is. He really is teaching us things that are essential to our own salvation. Is it good enough merely for us to be religious and fervently so? Are all religious people going to be saved? We know that's not the case. Even, of course, the Jews in Christ's time. And I know we've looked at Romans 10, 1 through 3 before, but Jewish leaders in Christ's time and in Paul's time, did they have a zeal of God? Were they religious? Yet Romans 10, 1, Paul's prayer and desire was that Israel might be saved. Well, here this, and he says and testified that they had a zeal of God. So these very religious, zealous for God people, Paul was praying that they'd be saved. I mean, that tells you right there that being very religious and having a zeal of God by itself is not sufficient for saving our souls. We have to practice pure religion, an undefiled religion before God. That means not going about to establish our own righteousness, for one thing, which is what they were doing in Romans 10, 1 through 3. So we can't come up with our own set of rules, our own doctrines and commandments, and follow those and be saved. Now, how many religious people are doing that? They're religious, have a zeal of God, but they're following a system of religion that's based in the wisdom, the doctrines, and practices that men have come up with, rather than God. I mean, that's been the problem right there from the beginning, hasn't it? I mean, Cain did that, that's still happening. And so we have to make sure that we're not those. So that's why we have to be swift to hear. We have to listen to God. We've been begotten by His Word. We have to listen to His Word. Be slow to speak, and then we get that last part of verse 19, slow to wrath. We got a little bit into that at the end of our last time studying this, but we did have time enough to make note of the fact that the Greek word there that's translated wrath is the word orge, which means a desire, as a reaching forth or excitement of the mind is the literal definition there. And that's not the same word as thumos, which is sometimes translated wrath in the New Testament. So we can't just read in our King James translation, for example, we can't just find every time we read the word wrath in the New Testament and conclude that that's talking about this very same thing. It's rather unfortunate that the translator sometimes translated orge into the word wrath and sometimes translated thumos as wrath. So we have to look at the context go digging in and look it up to see. That can really help us not to misunderstand some of those passages, but we need to be aware of that fact that those are two distinct words. And we also pointed out and looked at some of the a couple of places in Ephesians, in Galatians 5 in particular, where he lets us know that word thumos is identified as one of those works of the flesh, that if we do that, then we cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. I mean, that's a much stronger word or outpouring of anger, in the sense, really, we identify that as like a rage. It's a very different level, and it's by definition something that is a sin. Now, the word orge is not, at least not necessarily so. And we looked at Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26, where he says, "Be angry and sin not." Then said, "Let not the sun go down upon our anger," and said that neither give place to the devil. And then in verse 31 of Ephesians 4, he said, "Put off all of these," and he included anger and wrath, and he mentions both the orge and the thumos there, to put all of it away. So we can learn quite a few points from Ephesians 4 that we're just reviewing now where we left off last time. But this anger, which is the word that he's using here in James 1, 19 and 20, it's orge again, just like in Ephesians 4, 26, where he translates it anger or angry. is it necessarily a sin? Is it possible to have orge, this anger, and not commit sin? Yes, it's possible. That's what he tells us in Ephesians 4:26, not to commit sin, if we do have that. Now, is the fact that it's not inherently or necessarily sinful, does that mean, and this is a really good teaching point, if our standard is only to avoid what is sinful, and we do need to avoid all things that are sinful, but if that's the only standard that we have, well, then what would that do with anger, with this orge? Would that be something we could engage in and continue in? If we're only avoiding what is necessarily sinful, then we could. But that's not the standard that God calls us to. We need to put away and we need to lay aside every sin, don't we? But we also need to lay aside every what? In Hebrews 12:1. Every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. And it wasn't that long ago we were studying in Hebrews and went over that in quite some detail. But there's a two-part thing there. Lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. Do we have to lay aside things that are not necessarily sinful things? We need to lay aside anything that would hinder us, that would weight us down as we're trying to run this race to be this first fruits of his creatures, to be perfect and entire, lacking nothing, to have his love perfected in us, to be conformed to the image of Christ, all those different ways he describes that goal, partakers of the divine nature, be filled with all the fullness of God. I mean, he approaches that and defines that, describes that for us, teaches us about that in quite a number of ways in various passages in the New Testament. But in all of those, we see the parallel, and it gets right down to the point of what we're striving for as our ultimate goal on this earth as disciples of Christ. But that involves putting aside everything, sin or not, if it's going to weight us down spiritually and hinder us in any way. And there are lots of things that we can spend our time in that are utterly vain in terms of its purpose in accomplishing the righteousness of God. And that's the true standard that we're given right there in that passage in James 1 and verse 20. The reason why he says to be slow to anger, the reason why he says to put all of it off, well, there are a couple of things. Does it, even though it's not necessarily sinful, does it make us more prone to falling into sin? Does it give a place or an opportunity to the devil? It clearly does, which is why he says, "When be angry and sin not, neither let the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil." There's a reason why all of that's joined together there. If we stew on it, if we persist in it, if we don't get rid of that quickly, and then also totally and permanently, what are the chances that we're going to end up falling into some kind of sin? What are the chances that we're going to have thoughts we shouldn't have, or say things that we shouldn't say, do something that we shouldn't be doing in the way that we treat somebody if we're angry with them? If we're angry, is it what's more likely to happen, that we're angry and sin not, or that we're angry and we sin? It's far more, let's be honest about it, it's far more likely that we're going to be angry in sin than that we sin not. So aren't we taking a great risk when we allow ourselves to fall to or get into being angry? We really are, and that's why he says don't do it. What's the bottom line? Well, not only does it put us in jeopardy of committing sin, but it also, that's the negative side of it. It tends to cause us to fall into sin. But what's the other side? Is there a positive? Does it in any way work the righteousness of God? Is it going to help us, assist us, encourage us in any way, aid us in our goal to be like Christ and growing in his image? Not at all. It is not going to work God's righteousness. It's not going to help us. It can only be a hindrance. It can only be a weight there. We need to put it away. Which shows us the very high standard that we have, that we've already been looking at here, that and in our lives, this needs to be what's in our minds, that we are seeking to, in every thought that we have, every word that we're speaking, every activity that we're engaged in, every form of our behavior, that all of that is geared towards accomplishing or working God's righteousness. That it is, it's not something that, and that's why he tells us to purge our conscience from dead works to serve the living God. The standard to work God's righteousness or to serve the living God. I mean, that's the same thing. We need to ask ourselves, what I'm doing here, is that serving the living God? Is it working his righteousness? Well, if it's a sin, it's not. But then a lot of things we can be doing or get involved in that may not be a sin, but it also is not working God's righteousness or serving the living God. So there's our standard. And if we measure up to that standard, are we going to be holy and are we going to be prepared for or be able to practice this pure and undefiled religion before God and be prepared for serving him and being with him in eternity? I mean, that's our goal there. So anger is a hindrance for that, and is not going to help us in any way. We do have some other verses we want to look at. I want to go to the book of Proverbs, and we want to go spend some time there, like we did when we were looking at the earlier part of verse 19, being swift to hear and slow to speak. We took the opportunity to look at quite a few of the Proverbs that teach on the subject of the tongue, and they are many. And we didn't look at all of them. Neither will we be able to look at all the Proverbs that teach on the subject of anger. But that's also a subject that gets much attention in the book of Proverbs. I mean, here's the wisdom of God exposed to us. Would we expect God in his wisdom to be teaching us, when we've already read what we have in the New Testament about anger, what it does, what it doesn't do, and why we need to put it away, when God is teaching us his wisdom in the book of Proverbs, as he does, would that be something that we would expect to come up as a subject? It is, and often. So let's go and look at some of that. Now, it's kind of interesting if we sort of look at maybe some of the categories of points that he teaches about anger in the book of Proverbs. One of the ones that we're going to notice is that anger is identified with fools. So, now, I'm not going to ask anybody to raise their hands right now because it would be all of us. But if we were to ask, you know, raise your hand if you've ever heard anybody speak about having righteous indignation or righteous anger. Which one of us has not heard that before? And that's some people will justify and say, this is when, you know, we have a right to be, or we should be angry about this or that, particularly if it's some kind of evil, which we find lots of scriptures that tell us to hate evil, to of course put it away, but we're to hate evil and love righteousness. But where's the verse that tells us to be angry at evil? And if I were just to stop right now and wait for all of us in the room so that we're all working together at this to cut down on the time and have us all searching our either flipping pages or tapping on our screens, doing a search to find the verse in God's Word that teaches that, that we need to be angry at evil, how long are we going to be in here waiting on that to come up? Until we give up, when we recognize that it's not there, because it's not. What's the verse that where we find righteous indignation mentioned? It's the same place. It's the same place wherever that is that's not in the Bible. It's not there. I mean, we don't find any of that there. We find consistency of teaching in God's Word, just like we would expect. Now, why would God tell us in one place that anger is something that would lead us into sin, does not work as righteousness, therefore put it all away, and then find somewhere else where he says, but you need to get angry over here in these circumstances? I mean, how would that fit together? Well, it wouldn't, and that's why we don't find that. We find consistency in God's word where he's teaching us why we shouldn't be angry, what's wrong with anger, and we're going to look at that right now. So in Proverbs 27, verses 3 and 4, this is one of those that summarizes a few different things. It highlights envy, but it also hits on anger here quite strongly. Proverbs 27, verses 3 and 4 says, "A stone is heavy and the sand weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. Wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous. But who is able to stand before envy?" Anger and or envy, which of those two things in those verses gets the most attention? Well, there's more spoken about anger there. Now, he sums it up after all of that by asking the question, who is able to stand before envy? As bad as anger is, and how many things do people do that are cruel to others? When people get angry at someone, what are they capable of doing in their anger? Really, everything. That's right. Many, many evils. Has anybody ever been killed because somebody got really angry at them? But what did Pilate understand that he was delivered for? And that's the thing he says about envy there. I mean, they were angry with him for sure, but that envy. When the devil needed a tool out, to pull a tool out to use to make sure the job was done, that's the one. And he makes a point about that. Anger is all those things that he mentions there. It is heavier than stone and sand. We know how heavy are rocks and sand. I mean, those are the heaviest things that we deal with, really. I mean, the only other thing he could have probably mentioned there maybe is lead, but the point is pretty obvious, isn't it? I mean, he's mentioning stones and sand as far as being heavier, and he says that a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. So somebody who's going to get angry is what kind of person there in verse 4? A fool. So if we're an advocate for anger, if we're one of these ones that's pushing righteous indignation and wanting to make that to exist, which it doesn't, but what side are we on there? Yeah, let's you know, if we had the whiteboard here, we could draw the line down the middle and put wise or fool. And if we're siding with anger in any way, we're on that fool side of the board. We're not being wise. He identifies anger with foolishness, and he's showing how destructive it is. It's heavier than rocks and sand. It's cruel. It's outrageous. And then you got envy that's even on another level from that. There, that's what he says about, that's just a plain statement about anger right there and identifying it with foolishness. Let's go back to chapter 12, Proverbs 12 and verse 16. He says, "A fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covereth shame." And again, that's part of what's wrong with anger. And that's why we see it in James 1:19, "Be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger." How many angry people are quiet? That's not what happens typically. When somebody gets angry, then the mouth starts running, doesn't it? And that's where a lot of the sin comes in, or one of the areas it does. And he says a fool's wrath is presently known. I mean, how many people get angry and it's not immediately known to everybody that person's angry? They're going to be acting out in some way, speaking in some way. It's going to be obvious to everybody. But when he's talking about someone who's wise and prudent, what are they going to do with shameful things? He said, hide those things. So in order to do that, we have to be slow to anger, don't we? So he's pointing out the difference between wise, what's wise and what's foolish there. Again, we see wrath on the fool side, but we see wisdom being something that's going to be associated with hiding what is shameful. That's not in the sense of, well, the shameful things are being done and we're just finding a way to make sure nobody knows about it. This is talking about covering or hiding where it doesn't happen. And when we are slow to anger, we're not going to say and do those things that the fool's going to do when who is angry, and their anger is presently known. So that's he's making that contrast very clear there. In chapter 14, Proverbs 14, verses 16 and 17, he says, "A wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rageth and is confident. He that is soon angry dealeth foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated." So he says, a wise man fears and departs from evil. And in this context, what are we going to be? If we have the fear of the Lord, which is to hate evil and love righteousness, then what is going to be our attitude towards our approach to anger? We would recognize that's on the list of things that doesn't accomplish God's righteousness. And if we love righteousness and it doesn't work God's righteousness, then is that something we're going to love, or is that something we're going to avoid? We're going to avoid that. And so here he's teaching the fear of the Lord and associating with that and departing from evil and putting things away that are evil, including things that are going to likely cause us to fall into evil. Just like Ephesians 4 teaches, and that's why we should put all of it away. But he says, who is the one that rages? The fool. And is confident. Now, how many, and this is another one that comes up that we're going to look at a little bit more in just a moment, Lord willing, in the Proverbs. It's the next one we want to highlight. But is anger associated with humility? I mean, not at all. So this foolish man who's raging, is he going to be confident? Yeah, he's going to be very confident in himself and what he's doing, but in his foolishness. And how is the one that's soon angry, how does he deal? Foolishly, he says in verse 17. So to be slow to anger is a way to keep us from dealing foolishly. So we see this point taught over and over again. Verse 29 here in the same chapter of Proverbs 14, 29, he says, "He that is slow to wrath is of great understanding, but he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly." How often do we see anger and foolishness or folly tied together here in Proverbs? Over and over again. He's teaching us how not to be a fool, how to be wise, and what's one of the big keys? Don't be angry. Another one is going to be don't be proud and be a scorner. But those are tied together too. I mean, we see the pride and scorning, wrath and strife. That all goes together. So to be wise, those are all things that we've got to avoid, put away. So we don't want to be hasty of spirit. We need to be, we don't need to have a quick fuse. That's why he says be slow to anger. And if we can just turn to anger at a moment, we're going to end up exalting folly. So we need to, that's going to take work in, and isn't this temperance to be able to control ourselves so that we don't allow ourselves to get that, have that rise up in us, that anger? Is it possible to control ourselves and not let ourselves be quick to it? It is. Now that takes, where is that got to be formed? See, this takes work in our hearts. So the Lord, we have to do, of course, our part in that, as James chapter 1 is teaching. We've got to study His Word, learn these things, and give all diligence to putting that into practice. God has to, now, can we do that all on our own, though? Or do we need his work does he need to work in us both to will and to do his good pleasure? Yeah, we need his work on our hearts. But is he going to do that if we're not yielding ourselves to him as we are diligently seeking him? We've got to do that. But if we do, then he can form our hearts in this way. And is it possible for someone who's had a problem with anger to grow spiritually and overcome that? Yes, and that's what he's teaching. But if we don't recognize, number one, that this is associated with folly, it leads us into sin, and it doesn't work God's righteousness. If we don't start with understanding that to see why we need to put that away, how are we going to grow out of that? But we can grow out of that if we will receive his teachings here. And so much in Proverbs, he talks about receiving correction and that being how we gain understanding, which is also what's coming right after what we're looking at in James 1, that looking in this mirror of his word, which is what a mirror does, is it rebukes us. Well, here are all these verses that are teaching us about pride and anger and how foolish that is. I mean, are we not getting slapped around with this? I mean, it's real. We're getting rebuked by all these verses when we have these problems. But what's the right response to those rebukes and the correction that he's giving us here with all these teachings? Humble ourselves and receive that, and let's seek him with all of our heart to grow, and then that can happen, and that's God's will for that to happen. Well, those very words there, Proverbs 14:29, he that is slow to wrath is of great understanding. I mean, that's a quotation from James 1:19, and it's word for word. Be slow to wrath. So that's exactly what he says here. So if we do that, he says we're of great understanding. So we is that something? We can either be a fool or we can be of great understanding. Now, which are we attracted towards? Well, hopefully it will be the being of great understanding. That should be something that is very appealing to us when we love the Lord. And that's what we can be. But we've got to be slow to wrath for that to be the case. And as we go to chapter 16 now, speaking of being slow to wrath, Proverbs chapter 16, verse 32 says, he that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh the city. So we just read a moment ago about being hasty of spirit will exalt folly. What's the opposite of being hasty of spirit? Ruling our spirit. That means when we have that's our inner man. When we have that brought into subjection to under control, where it is being ruled over by what? Well, it has to be by God and his teachings. And if we have, and wasn't Paul, what was he doing to himself so that he wouldn't be a castaway? Wasn't he buffeting his body to bring it into subjection? I mean, there's our battle. We need to be bringing our spirit, our inner man, under control, to be controlled by the Lord and his teachings, that we'll be subject to that in everything. Well, that's a big task, but it's really the essence of what our race and running our race is about. But if we do that, if we can rule our spirit. Now, when we think of somebody who's really strong, somebody that's able to go and a man that has the kind of might where he can go conquer a city, Is that a person that we would say, well, that one is really, that is a really mighty person. But what does he say? And have there been any like that that could conquer a city? Well, yeah. And David did that to Jerusalem, didn't he? When it was Jebus. And the Jebusites even mocked him. Did they think that he was one that could take a city? Of course, it was the Lord with him, but David knew that the Lord would be with him, just like he was when he defeated Goliath. He knew the Lord was going to be on his side, and doing that was the work of God. And he was fully confident that God would fulfill his promises. So David had no hesitation to go and do that. But, I mean, there was a mighty man made so by the Lord, but we can look at David slaying Goliath, David taking Jerusalem and making that his city, and we see that might there. And, of course, it was God's work through David because of David's love for the Lord and his righteousness. But what's greater than that? And when we see David, what was great about David? Was it that he killed a giant? Was it that he took a city? Or was it because he was a man after God's own heart? And how can we be a man after God's own heart if we don't rule our spirit? Were there times when David was dealing with the wicked, and temptation was set before him to have anger and act upon it? Yeah, the Nabal, the one who was named fool, that one comes right to mind. Of course, the Lord used Abigail to help David to not be hasty of spirit and to end up committing an act that he shouldn't. But did David listen to her? When God used that righteous woman of great understanding there, and he heard those words, did he recognize the truth and wisdom in her words? He did. And he showed a lot of humility there, but he restrained himself. And what about the two times that he could have killed Saul, that he'd been running from day after day after day for years, this man that was trying to kill him, that had all the power as being the king of the land, and pursued him relentlessly. And, of course, the scriptures tell us there was not a day that Saul wasn't pursuing after David. He didn't take a day off from it. And here David had two chances, two opportunities to kill that one who was making his life that miserable, and could even justify it as, well, it's self-defense. Would that have been self-defense for David to have killed Saul? But did he do it? He didn't do it. He wouldn't lift up his hand against the Lord's anointed. Did he have to rule his spirit to not fall to that temptation to destroy his enemy? So we see many examples of that with David. But there was a man who did take cities, but far greater and far more powerful than that is his example in ruling his spirit. And that's what his son, Solomon, was inspired with these words. We need to strive to be like that, but recognize the power in that, which also shows us the difficulty. I mean, how easy is it to take a city? How easy is it for us to rule our spirit? When he says that we're stronger if we can do that than if we could take a city. So that's going to be a big job, but it's to be done. And we must do that. And of course, it'll be the Lord doing that in us as we humble ourselves before him to seek him so that he will do that. Proverbs 19 and verse 11 says, "The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression." Now, does that sound like righteous indignation? It's the opposite. He's teaching us here to be discreet, and if we are a wise man, then our discretion will defer anger. And he says it's our glory to pass over a transgression. So instead of getting angry when somebody does something wrong, and having our so-called righteous indignation, what's better? to have our discretion to defer that anger and pass over a transgression. That's teaching the opposite of so-called righteous indignation, isn't it? It is. It's teaching us not to do that. So rather than getting angry, and I mean, how many people do wrong things every day? Now, is it God's place to have his anger at wickedness and to take his vengeance on that? Yes, that's God's place. We can read in Psalms, how many days does God have anger towards the wicked? Every day. But is that our job? No, it's not our job to do that. Now, if we were going to get angry every time somebody did something wrong, and we are going to be angry every day. In fact, we'll be angry, it'll be all day every day, much of the time. I mean, how does your day at work start? I mean, that we can start with getting angry about every, and I know, you ever worked with somebody like that actually did that? It's not pleasant being around somebody like that, which we're going to get to that here in a moment too, but being angry all the time at everything that when somebody does something they shouldn't, that's not the way the Lord teaches us to be at all. And if we are, then what kind of person are we? We've seen already that he identifies that with foolishness. But there's another part of this too. Proverbs 21, verse 24. Proverbs 21 and verse 24. Proud and haughty scorner is his name, who dealeth in proud wrath. So it's foolish to be angry, but it's also associated with pride, isn't it? A humble man, is a humble man an angry man? That doesn't go together. But if we are proud and a scorner, well, that's going to go with anger. But that's why he says not to do that. And here's one, I hope my children all remember Proverbs 13 and verse 10, as many times as I've used that before. But only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Is it possible to have two people in a fight without pride being involved? But what they did, and that's what we all want to do, is point out, well, I'm angry and I'm in a fight with them, but it's because they did whatever it was they did. But then what does that other person say? Yeah, but what did they do? So everybody's pointing at the other one. But if you have one person that is humble, how much of a fight is going to occur? Well, what did we just read? If the other person does say or do something they shouldn't, the one who's humble and is ruling their spirit, their discretion is going to defer their anger and they'll pass over the transgression. So instead of being a fight, even if the other person wants to fight, if the other one is humble and won't do it, there's not going to be a fight. That's why we also, before when we were looking at and why this is tied together with being swift to hear and slow to speak. Proverbs 15 verse 1 tells us that a soft answer will turn away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. So when we get angry, we tend to, which he already said, is heavier than sand and rocks, then our words tend to accompany that, and then that's going to provoke others to anger, and then that's going to provoke us to more anger, and then it just escalates. But if we are humble and the other person is angry about something, and even if they've done whatever they've done, and if we give a soft answer and we're humble, we're not going to be fighting. We're not going to be angry. We're not going to be involved in strife. It's only by pride that comes contention, and anger goes right along with that. Proverbs 29, verse 8. Proverbs 29 and verse 8. Scornful men bring a city into a snare, but wise men turn away wrath. So there again we see the scornful on the one side, the wise ones on the other, who are turning away wrath, which scorners don't. So we don't want to be foolish. We don't want to be proud. And we don't want to be involved in strife. Now this, I mentioned that with our kids will get in, you know, brothers and sisters, they get in their squabbles. What a training ground that is, isn't it? I mean, for the Lord to work. We're born into, I guess, unless you're the firstborn, which I was not. I was the lastborn. So, I mean, I was born right into it. And I hit the ground running, I guess. But many of us are born into families and the siblings are already there. And how long does it take before the squabbling begins and the quarreling and all of that? Well, as soon as, I mean, it doesn't take long because even a little baby wants something the other one has and then they get mad. I mean, it starts right there. I mean, when the firstborn, they'll get mad at the baby. I mean, that's where it starts. And then when the baby's old enough to understand, they're getting, the other one's mad at them, they get mad back. I mean, the fighting starts, we know that. It starts right there early on. Well, we have to train our children in that they need to be humble and they need to defer anger and not enter into strife. Anger is associated with strife. It's not true, only true though of children, siblings. And how many kids when they're little fight like that and then they never learn, and then when they're adults, they're still fighting with their siblings as adults. Even when they're old. I mean, that some never stop it. And they get to a point and their parents pass on and they're fighting over the inheritance. I mean, it's sad to see that, but people will fight and fight and fight. Born into the world and start fighting and fight all the way to the end. But if that's how we live our lives, we're not in the image of Christ if we do that. So we got to learn about this. And no better time to learn than as a child. But, I mean, what about in a marriage? What about with husband and wife? I mean, how many husbands and wives fight? I mean, and one will do something and the other gets mad about it. And then they're fighting about that. Well, I mean, that's not a good thing either. If we're going to love the other person, we're going to be humble and put others ahead of ourselves, and that's what he teaches us to do. If we're putting others ahead of ourselves and not looking on our own things and being humble, passing over transgressions, deferring our anger, and, I mean, how much fighting is there going to be? We can learn that. And husbands and wives, that needs to be learned and practiced there. If we learn that growing up and learn how to deal with our siblings and our families, and that'll help us to be ready for marriage. If we're fighting with our brothers and sisters, then finally leave home, then you'll have a spouse to fight with. But that's not a pleasant way to live life. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 18 says, "A wrathful man stirreth up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife." So pride is involved, it's foolish, but what happens with anger? I mean, what ends up happening almost always? Strife. Somebody gets angry, there's going to be a fight. And somebody who is slow to anger, what are they going to be doing with strife? Appeasing it. Now, we're either going to be stirring it up or we're going to be putting it down. We're either going to be involved in fighting or we're going to be peacemakers. Which one do we want to be? When the Lord in Proverbs 6, when he's describing those six things that he hates, the seven that are an abomination to him, and that last one, he that sows discord among brethren, what does the Lord think of fighting? He hates it. If, on the other hand, if we're a peacemaker, what did Jesus teach in the Sermon on the Mount about that? Yeah, we'll see God. God loves that person. That's a humble person. But a big part of that is that we're going to be slow to anger. That we're going to be putting that away and not getting angry. Proverbs 29 and verse 22. Proverbs 29 verse 22. An angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression. That's why he says, be angry and sin not. But what are your chances? Not very good. This is the way it goes almost always. Somebody gets furious, it's not going to be just that they fall to some temptation, but they're going to abound in it. That's what he says, put that away. But if we're angry, we're going to be stirring up strife. I mean, how do you see somebody that fights a lot? I mean, who fights a lot that's not proud and angry? Those just are very closely associated, all tied together. Proverbs 30 and verse 33. Surely, then, this is very very graphically described in a very clear manner. But he says, surely the churning of milk bringeth forth butter, and the wringing of the nose bringeth forth blood. So the forcing of wrath bringeth forth strife. That's all true, isn't it? I mean, you churn that milk. I mean, that's how you make butter. Of course, you know, if you can grab somebody by the nose. We shouldn't do that either, of course. But it will bring forth blood. You get somebody angry. If somebody gets angry, I mean, how often is that not going to lead to strife? It's going to do it. That's how closely together we see those things without permanently leaving Proverbs. We got a couple more to look at, Lord willing, here. But in keeping with this context, this is what we also see in James chapter 3 as he builds on the teachings of chapter 1 in the book of James. In chapter 3, he says in verse 14, but if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, well, we started in Proverbs 27, 3 and 4, and we saw how anger and wrath, how it's heavier than rocks and sand, and it's cruel and outrageous. Who can stand before envy? Well, here he says, if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts. But what did we just read that is going to lead to strife every time? Anger. So he's teaching against both of these right here in James chapter 3. If you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. So the wisdom that says that there's such thing as righteous indignation, what kind of wisdom is that? He just described it in verse 15. It's earthly, sensual, and devilish. Verse 16 says, for where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. So when he just said that the forcing of strife, of wrath, produces strife, what does strife produce? Confusion in every evil work. So you start with anger, and then what do you end up with? You get the strife, you get the confusion in every evil work. So how do we not do that then? Well, that's where James 1:19 says, be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Verse 17, James 3:17 says, but the wisdom that is from above is, and this is right along with all these proverbs we were seeing too, he says, is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy, and the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Is there any anger in that in verses 17 and 18, the kind of man he's describing there? Mm-mm, not at all. That's somebody who's humble and gentle and is going to be making peace. And that's who we need to be. Now, somebody who's given to anger, though, is that something that just happens typically one time, or is a person that does that, is that something that they tend to do over and over again? Well, where does it come from? That'll answer that. I mean, that comes from the heart. And so if we have that in our hearts, I mean, does it just erupt once? If we have anger, if we have that problem in our hearts, how often is it going to manifest itself until it's purged out? It's going to keep producing that, just like any other problem or weakness we have in our hearts. That's true of anger also. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 19. He says, a man of great wrath shall suffer punishment, for if thou deliver him, yet thou must do it again. Well, why? Because he's going to get angry again. So he's got to learn that the anger is foolish and to put it away. But if you spare him that lesson, then you're going to be right back where you started, and it's going to happen all over again. And what does he teach us to do if it is a person like that? Proverbs 14 verse 7 says, go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. Well, and what have we seen over and over again that's identified with foolishness? Does that apply to somebody who's angry? It does. So if we find somebody who's given to anger, then we had better stay away from that particular that person and not be involved with somebody who's like that. Otherwise, we're going to learn those foolish ways, and we're going to end up being like that foolish and angry person. So the Lord warns us about that. In Proverbs chapter 22, verses 24 and 25. Proverbs 22, 24 and 25. He says, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. I mean, if we're associating ourselves with that, are we going to learn those ways? Do evil communications corrupt good manners? Yeah, and if we're around that, will that leaven us if that's what we're around? Mm-hmm. So he says, don't do it. So we need to be associating ourselves, and we need to be making friends with those who are the Lord's friends, and those are going to be the ones that are humble and peacemakers. All right, we're out of time, so Lord willing, we will continue on in our study of James 1 next Wednesday night. But we very much appreciate everybody being here this evening for our study.